It's in Dubai, in India, and it's the world's first luxury underwater hotel. Pretty sweet. Located about 60 feet underneath the water, it's made of reinforced steel, concrete, and plexiglass. 70% of each room is made from plexiglass, so that you can literally lie on your bed and watch as the marine life swims all around you. Pretty amazing, huh? There are 220 suites. It's actually still under construction. 220 suites that will cost about $5,000 per night to rent. And it is the first that I'm aware of, self-acclaimed 10-star resort, okay? Now, I don't know if you can really claim yourself to be a 10-star resort. They put that title on themselves. I guess their idea, though, is that they blow every other place out of the water. They're double as good as a 5-star resort. And of course, normally the star rating system only goes up to 5. They say they're a 10. Whatever it is, it looks pretty amazing, right? Now, maybe that's kind of your idea of heaven, like this just amazing, unbelievable thing, place to stay. There's a lot of thoughts about heaven. I read online a guy, he's an agnostic, which basically means he doesn't know for sure if there's a God. And so he asked the question, what's your idea of heaven? Got a bunch of replies. One was that heaven was the true form of love and joy. It's being completely at peace with everything, is what one person said. Another person said, heaven is animals, a vegetable garden, a natural spring, and no God bothering me to be more like him. Bummer, huh? One guy said, heaven is free beer. That was his take on heaven. Thankfully, you're going to see today, heaven is a lot cooler than free beer. Another guy said, heaven is no Christians. I guess he hates Christians enough that he doesn't want us around. But I hate to break it to that guy. If there are no Christians around, he's not in heaven. Okay? We know where he ended up. As we look at Revelation 21, though, today, I want you guys to put out of your mind anything you already thought about heaven. Now, maybe you're kind of on the right track with some of them, but I'll bet a lot of it is kind of off. We're going to see John's description, and I think it'll be much more, I mean, I guess if we're going with the star rating system, it's not like a 5 or a 10. It's like an infinity star resort, okay? You just keep giving it stars because it's just continually blowing our minds for eternity how amazing this thing is. John is actually writing in Revelation 21 and 22 about the vision that he sees of heaven. And it's this amazing thing descending out of the sky. And even he, as he's watching it, has a hard time putting it into words. It's pretty hard to describe. In fact, I think if I use the most artistic words and the most vivid pictures out there, I could maybe make heaven sound okay. And I hate to break it to you, but heaven is much more than okay. Heaven is indescribably amazing. In fact, since it's indescribably amazing, I am not capable, no human is, I believe, of fully describing it. John even has a really hard time putting it into words. And so today, even though we've spent most of our study in Revelation looking at the judgment of God, today we look at the other side, the reward for those who have committed their lives to Christ and are following him. We're looking forward to that. And this passage is just really amazing to me. I think you guys will find it amazing as well. So if you guys are taking notes on your bulletin, I'm going to give you guys three important things about heaven. We'll start, of course, with number one, and that is the infinite value of heaven. Okay? Let's read in Revelation 21. We'll look at the first 8 verses. Revelation 21, verse 1. Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth, that's the one we live on now, had passed away. Also, there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Then he who sat on the throne said, behold, I make all things new. And he said to me, write, for these words are true and faithful. And he said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. So John here is trying to describe this. He's seeing this vision of heaven, and he's totally in awe of what he's seeing. He can't even believe his eyes. If you guys ever seen somebody, maybe they're like in your math class at school, and they totally just for a few seconds just zone out, you know? They're like staring into space. And you're like, hello, what's going on, right? And like they're just staring. You're waving your hands in front of them, and they're just like blank stare into the wall, you know, or the ceiling or whatever they're. And for a moment, it's like they lost all focus and they can't even function, you know? I've even seen it happen where like somebody has their pen in their hand, like ready to write, and they're just like staring, you know, like what's wrong with you, you know? I almost picture John in a similar place. He is in awe of what's happening here, and it seems for a moment he must have kind of zoned out. Okay, check this out. Chapter 21, verse 5. He's seen this whole vision. He's seen the new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven in the previous verses. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, etc. Verse 5. Then he who sat on the throne said, behold, I make all things new. So he's seeing this amazing vision. He's hearing the actual voice of God. And then look at the end of verse 5. It says, and he said to me, write, for these words are true and faithful. I kind of picture John there. He's got like his parchment paper laid out on the table. He has this like big pen in his hand, and he's just going, staring at the new heaven, okay? He's just amazed, and God's like, hey, John, hello, write, these words are true and faithful. God's like, you need to be recording what you're seeing. People need to know what I'm showing you. And so he gets his attention, but what's so amazing? What is it that captured John's attention that he's going to try to describe its infinite value to us? Well, two things. I want to give you guys two things about the infinite value of heaven that you guys need to understand. You can write these down if you'd like. The first thing that makes heaven valuable is that the curse is removed. Now, one way John is going to describe heaven to us is by telling 15 things that are not in heaven. 15 things. And you can follow along with me. I'll read off those 15 things for you. Chapter 21, verse 1, lists the first three things. That's the first heaven, the first earth, and the sea. Everything that we know right now, the sky, the earth, and all oceans are gone. First three things. The fourth thing that won't be there in verse 4 are tears. The fifth thing is death. The sixth thing is sorrow. Seventh is pain. Death, sorrow, pain, tears, crying, it's all wiped away. The eighth thing, down in verse 8 of chapter 21, he lists a bunch of types of sins. He basically tells us all sinners of any kind will not be there. The ninth thing, down in verse 22, it says that there will be no temple in heaven. The tenth thing in verse 23 tells us that there will be no sun, there will be no moon. So the sun's gone, the moon's gone. We look in verse 25, it says there will be no night. That's the 12th thing. The 13th thing in verse 27 is that anything that defiles. So anything bad of any kind will not be there in heaven. The 14th thing in chapter 22, verse 3, the curse is removed. And in verse 5 of chapter 22, there will be no lamp. That doesn't mean there will be no light, but there won't be any artificial lighting. We'll look at how God's glory is what lights heaven itself. Pretty amazing. My favorite, though, I guess, of the 15 that I could choose from would have to be kind of the all-encompassing one, chapter 22, verse 3. It says, and there shall be no more curse. The curse takes us all the way back to Genesis chapter 3. That was when sin entered humanity. And when sin entered, its consequences entered. Sin is the cause of all pain, suffering, death, tears, sorrow. Before sin, there were none of those things. But one infinitely valuable thing about heaven is that the curse is removed. But heaven is not just about what's not there. It's also about who is there. And that's the second part of the value of heaven. That's that fellowship is restored. Look at chapter 21, verse 3. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God." Look ahead to verse 7. "He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son." Look ahead to chapter 22, verse 3. "And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servant shall serve him. They shall see his face, and his name shall be on their foreheads." So fellowship is restored. One job, there's a lot of different jobs out there. One job that has always interested me, not that I'd ever want to do it, but it's kind of a crazy job, is the job of the paparazzi, right? They got their cameras, and their whole goal in life is to like stalk celebrities and take pictures of them doing whatever it is that they do, right? It could be anything. And then eventually they get a picture, they sell it for hundreds or thousands of dollars to the newspaper, and then we see the picture and the headline at the grocery store, at Walmart, at Target when we're checking out, right? And it's something about like this celebrity's ordinary everyday life that most of us don't care about, you know? Like Miley Cyrus takes her dog for a walk, see the exclusive pictures. Like, oh, cool, she went for a walk like every other human has done with their dog at some point, right? Or Britney Spears goes to Starbucks, read what she ordered. Like I care, you know? John Mayer goes grocery shopping. Do you eat what he eats? Find out inside. Like I care what John Mayer eats, you know? We have all these different headlines of these celebrities and we freak out when we see one of them. We're like, oh, it's a celebrity. I got to take a picture and then tell the world what they're doing. You know, and we have all these headlines. Why is it that we freak out so much? Well, I think it's because celebrities live lives that have to be somewhat secluded from the rest of us normal people, you know? Because they're rich and they're famous and everybody knows them, and so they can't always just go out into the public. So when they do make an appearance, we freak out. We get all excited about it. And so we have these headlines, and you know, unfortunately, a lot of people feel that same way with God. He's in his own world, doing his own thing, and every once in a while through prayer or through a vision or something, he appears, and then he vanishes again. And a lot of times people feel this like disconnect from God because he's this high and lofty, disconnected God. Well, that's pretty sad to me because God didn't create us to be that way. That was not how fellowship with God was designed. And it's important that you understand that all the way back in Genesis chapter 3, we were talking about that with the curse. That's when it happened. But before the curse happened, before sin entered, we read in Genesis chapter 3 that God himself came down into the Garden of Eden to take a walk in the cool of the day with Adam himself. Can you even imagine how cool that would be? Here is earth, it's perfect. God has hand-planted a garden, Eden. Man and woman are there in the garden, perfect. God himself comes down to just take a walk with them. How amazing is that? That's the fellowship that we are supposed to be able to have with God. Genesis 3 hit. Sin entered. The curse happened. And the fellowship was broken. But one of the infinitely valuable parts of heaven is that fellowship is restored with God. Chapter 21, verse 3, we just read it, says he will dwell with them. God will dwell with us. Chapter 22, verse 4 says they shall see his face. In heaven, there is nothing that restricts us or separates us from God any longer. So because the curse is removed, fellowship is restored. And because the curse is removed and fellowship is restored, heaven is infinitely valuable. There's no way we could place a value on heaven. So it's infinitely valuable. Here's the second thing about heaven. Let's get the outside view of this. Let's just see from the outside what it's going to look like. It's going to be pretty amazing. Earth has some pretty amazing places to live. There's one place I was reading about. It's the most expensive house on the market in the United States. It's called Three Ponds. It's in Bridgehampton, New York, and it's selling for $75 million. Check this out. 25,000 square foot house on 60 acres of land. Of course, it has three ponds stocked with fish, a U.S. Golf Association rated golf course on their property with its own pro shop, a 75-foot long swimming pool, a tennis court, and 14 gardens. Can you even, I can't even imagine living in a place like that. That's pretty sweet, but it's actually not that great compared to the most expensive house in the world, okay? Check this place out. It's called Updown Court. It's in Windlesham, England, selling for $139 million. $139 million. Okay, check out what's on the property. 103 bedrooms in the house. It's like a hotel. Five swimming pools. In the study, on the tile, there's 24 karat gold everywhere. 24 karat gold just on the floor. They have their own bowling alley, their own tennis court, their own 50-seat movie theater. Their driveway is made of marble, and it's heated. Why would you want a heated driveway? I guess when you walk out in the morning and get the paper, your feet aren't cold. I don't know. I can't think of any other real good reason to have a heated driveway, much less a marble driveway. They have a helicopter pad, and check this out. In their garage, they have room for a limo. But not just one limo, not just two limos, eight limos could fit in their garage. Can you even imagine that? That's crazy. Okay, now, just take all that in. Look at how amazing that is. Look at that view of everything. You see the pools and the houses, and it has a couple separate guest houses, big fountain in the lake in front of it. You have these spiral staircases and a bowling alley. And I wonder what God says when he sees this. He looks at that and he's like, wow, that's pretty. Is that it? Really? That's it? That's the best you have? God's like, oh man, I'm sorry that is the best you've ever seen. Let me just take that and blow that out of the water, okay? God is about to just like completely take everything to a whole new level. Just the outside of heaven is going to blow your mind. You ready for this? Chapter 21, verse 10. And he carried me away. This is an angel comes to John, carries John away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. Okay, so John meets the angel. The angel takes him up onto a high mountain and he sees heaven that he calls the new Jerusalem coming out of the sky, descending down from the sky. He sees it. So he's having this vision. Verse 11, her light was like a most precious stone, like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. Also, she had a great and high wall with 12 gates and 12 angels at the gates and names written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. Three gates on the east, three gates on the north, three great gates on the south, and three gates on the west. Okay, so this is the outside view of heaven. Now, one stone that you need to be aware of, we're actually going to talk about a few, but one that you need to be aware of, we just read about it in verse 11, it's called a jasper stone. Now, when I say jasper, I want you guys to think of a diamond, okay? But not just a little tiny, cute little diamond in a ring, okay? I'm talking like the biggest, thickest, brightest, most reflective, clearest diamond you could even imagine. Okay, that's what I want you to think of when I talk about this stone called jasper. That's probably the best description of it. Now, if you look ahead to verse 21, you can read about these 12 gates that we just read about. It says the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each individual gate was of one pearl. Now, when you guys have heard about heaven before and you've heard about the pearly gates, I don't know about you, but I've always just thought of like some iron gates lined with pearls, right? I mean, the sounds like the pearly gates. shh. It sounds like the pearly gates, right? Well, that's not what this one says. It says each individual gate was of one pearl. One pearl. A whole gate made of one pearl. I would hate to meet that oyster that made that pearl, right? But can you even imagine? Obviously, it's not an oyster. It's God who crafted this. And it says the gate is made up of it. Verse 14, we read that the wall of the city had 12 foundations. Now, you can read ahead to verses 19 through 20. You can read the list of the precious stones and jewels that make up the foundation of heaven. Verses 19 through 20. You read about jasper, sapphire, emeralds, all kinds of these ornate, beautiful, precious gems. These are the things that we'll pay hundreds or thousands of dollars to get a little piece of it put in a ring or a little piece of it on a necklace. Hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars for these little stones. And those little tiny stones are the building blocks. They're like the bricks of heaven. That's what makes the foundation. They're like the cement that pours the foundation of this place called heaven. Okay? Now, pretty amazing. That part blew my mind. But the part that really amazed me and took it even to a further level was the measurements of heaven. You got to check this out. Verse 15. And he who talked with me had a gold reed to measure the city, its gates, and its wall. The city is laid out as a square. Its length is as great as its breadth. And he measured the city with the reed 12,000 furlongs. Its length, breadth, and height are equal. Okay, so 12,000 furlongs. I'm sure you guys already did the math in your head, but let me help you understand how much that is. 1,380 miles, okay? 12,000 furlongs. That means it's almost 1,400 miles wide, deep, and tall. Okay, so we have a cube here, and it's 1,400 miles wide, deep, and tall. Now, if you took a U.S. map and you placed it on the U.S. map, heaven would stretch from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico and from Colorado to the Atlantic Ocean. 1,400 miles wide, 1,400 miles deep, 1,400 miles tall. Okay, now, so it's this 1,400-mile cube. There's a bunch of pictures that I found. None of them, I think, really do it justice. I'll show you one artist's idea of how it may look. You can see how he tried to draw so that it sparkles and it's amazing and beautiful. You can see the 12 foundations that lay the foundation of the city. Kind of just a rough idea of it. Now, here's the thing. There have been a lot of estimates about how many people are going to be in heaven. Okay, can you guys do some math with me real quick? You ready for this? I'm not a big math guy either, but I think you guys can follow, all right? From the time of Adam till now, it's been estimated that there will be about 40 billion people who have lived, okay? I'm not saying 40 billion alive right now, but from Adam till now, 40 billion humans, rough estimate, will have lived, okay? We'll start there. Then think back to Revelation 20. We have a 1,000-year period that we studied called the millennium, where we come back and we reign with Christ on the earth. Do you remember that? Satan is locked up. All the sinners are gone. And there are God's people on the earth, and they are able to reproduce and repopulate the earth. So rough estimate, 1,000 years. We talked about how most likely people will be living longer at that time. So we could safely say if there's been 40 billion people who lived from Adam till now, in that 1,000-year period, that'll probably double, okay? So we could add another 40 billion. What are we up to now? 80 billion. Good, you're doing good. Okay, one more, ready? So we're up to 80 billion. Now let's add 20 billion for the babies that died right before birth or right after birth. 40, 40, and 20. What are we at? 100 billion people who make up all of the human race. Men, women, kids, babies. Okay? 100 billion people. Now, let's say a safe estimate that 20% of those people get saved. We know a vast majority of people will not accept Christ. They'll be in hell. So I think it's a pretty safe number to say 20% of that 100 billion people will get saved. How many people does that leave that heaven has to hold? 20 billion people. Okay, that's a lot of people. In fact, that's 3.5 times the amount of people who are currently living on earth. So now, I wonder if you're thinking, okay, I see a problem here. On the U.S. map, heaven is only half the size of the U.S. It's big, but how could 3.5 times the people who populate the whole earth survive or live in a place half the size of the United States? That's a problem, right? Well, not really. Because remember, heaven is not only 1,400 miles wide and deep, it's 1,400 miles tall. Okay? Now let me help you understand how tall that is. That's really, really tall. It says in verse 16, the city is laid out as a square, so we know it's tall. Let me give you some perspective. The tallest building that any human has ever been able to create, it's currently under construction, it's almost done. It's called the Burj Dubai. Of course, it's in Dubai. It's 2,684 feet tall, 160 stories, taller than the Sears Tower, taller than any other building in the whole world, okay? This is the tallest structure. It holds 5 world records currently, including tallest freestanding structure, most floors. We look at this, and I saw pictures of this, a bunch more. You should Google it and just see all the pictures that are out there. It's amazing. I would love to go there someday and just get a picture of it. You know, it's huge. And I look at this and it's amazing, and I'm thankful for my job that I'm not the window guy on the 160th floor, you know. Like the building's rocking and you're like, I hate my job, you know. But there he is, and they built this thing. It's amazing. It's the tallest thing we've ever been able to build. God sees this. I wonder what he does, you know. Like, wow, that's your tallest building? Oh, well, that's cute, you know. I mean, wow, it's actually pretty weak and puny. Okay, so let me put this in perspective for you. Compared to heaven, we're going to put a picture of heaven back up here on the screen. Okay, this is just a rough sketch and one artist's rendering of it. Now, do you guys want to see our biggest, that building that we just talked about? Do you want to see the biggest building we've ever built in comparison to heaven? You want to see how small it is? Okay, here we go. You ready? It's this little red dot. There's a dot. Squint. Put on your glasses. Okay? Pull out your bifocals. Whatever you have to do. Okay? The tallest structure we have ever built looks like a piece of dust in front of heaven. Can you believe that? This is crazy. I almost picture like God's looking at this and he's like, oh, what's in front of heaven? Flick that out of the way, you know? And of course, here on earth, when God flicks the building, boom, it's like all this massive destruction and we're like, oh no, everybody died. And God's like, oh, I was just cleaning it out of the way of heaven, you know? Like this little piece of dust. And I just honestly, this little red dot, I think it's like 4 pixels big. It's actually probably too big, realistically. If we're actually going by proportion, I just had to make it where you could see it. Realistically, I could probably bring a pencil up here and make a dot, and that would be about the right size compared to heaven. Our largest structure that we've ever built. Now you start to see why size could very easily handle 20 billion people. In fact, most likely, in our heavenly glorified bodies, we're not going to be held down by gravity and all of that stuff. Very likely, there will be streets that are horizontal, maybe streets that are vertical. And we can go all over. We don't just go, you know, wide and deep, but we can go up. Pretty amazing, right? In fact, it's been calculated, if it's, of course, these are very exact estimates or exact sizes. If there are 20 billion people that make it into heaven, every person would have a block one-third of a mile cubed, okay? So basically what that means is if I stand here and I go one-third mile that way, one-third mile that way, and one-third mile up, that would be my space in heaven. Talk about my space, right? There we go. And so God has created more than enough room for us all to dwell. And there it is. our biggest structure that we've ever built looks like a little speck of dust in front of heaven. So I don't know about you, but that blew my mind when I started realizing how huge this is. Let me help you understand how thick the walls are, okay? This gets even cooler. Verse 17. Then he measured its wall, 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of an angel. The construction of its wall was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, like clear glass. Now remember, jasper, what does it look like? Huge diamond, right? Crystal clear, reflecting light. It's amazingly beautiful. Okay, so it says that he measured the wall. Now, some people say, well, he must be measuring the height. It's already told us the height. Obviously, that's not the case. Probably what he's measuring here is the width of the wall. He says he measures it, and it comes out to 144 cubits thick. Now, again, I'm sure you've already done the math, but let me help you understand how thick that is. This heavenly wall that goes 1,400 miles up will be as thick as the back wall of the Plex. Okay, follow me. Ready? Walk outside, walk out the doors, walk across the sidewalk, through the grass, through the volleyball courts, across the basketball court, across the next sidewalk, and you touch the wall of the main building. That's the thickness of the wall.
Wow.
Did you follow me on that one? Okay, now think about it. Just look how thick that is, and now think about it being 1,400 miles in the air, crystal clear diamond. Can you even imagine this? Is this blowing anybody else's mind? Because it already blew mine. I don't think I have a mind left, okay? This is amazing. John 14, Jesus wasn't messing around when he said, I go to prepare a place for you. It wasn't like some dinky little mansion. This is unbelievable. Not only has Jesus died the death that we deserved, but he prepared this place for us. What horrible, undeserving people we are, and yet those who commit their lives to Christ have this awaiting us. Unbelievable. Now, I got to admit, by the time I got to Revelation 21, I was like, I don't think it can get any cooler than this. And then I realized, we've only seen the outside. We haven't even gotten into heaven yet, okay? You guys want to see the inside view? Let's check this out. That's the third part. We've seen the infinite value of heaven, who's not there, who is there. We've seen the outside view. Let's get the inside view. Chapter 21, verse 21. The 12 gates are 12 pearls. Each individual gate was of one pearl. And the street of the city was pure gold like transparent glass. But I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city had no need of the sun or of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God illuminated it. The Lamb is its light. Skip down to chapter 22, verse 1. And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations, and there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. They shall see his face, and his name shall be on their foreheads. There shall be no night there. They need no lamp nor light of the sun, for the Lord God gives them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. The inside view. Now, we're talking about a lot of gold here. We talked about streets made of gold. Now, I don't know what's going on in your minds when you think of gold, okay? Could be a lot of things. Could be golden bars like pirates, okay? Could be like a gold-plated iPod. Could be like a gold-plated iPhone. Could be like a gold-plated MacBook. It might just be a golden grill, okay? I don't know what it is that you're thinking of. I just want to meet that guy and hand him a toothpick and tell him he's got something in his teeth, you know? But the thing that all of those have in common, they're all yellow, right? I mean, they're golden. They look pretty sweet and expensive, and except not his teeth. But, you know, the thing that they have in common is that they're all golden yellow. When we think of gold, we think of that shade of yellow. Well, even the gold inside heaven is different than what we know. Look back at verse 21 of chapter 21. Each individual gate was made of one pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold like transparent glass. Heaven's gold is so pure that that it's completely see-through. It's like glass. The very asphalt and cement of heaven is pure, crystal clear gold. Can't even fathom this. And imagine how brilliant and how bright this place is as the streets and the walls and the foundation of heaven itself reflect the brightness and glory of God everywhere. It says that there's no sun, no moon, no lamp. God's glory reflecting off of all of this, I'll bet, is almost blinding. Now, in Bible times, when you had a city, of course, the first thing that you would do to protect yourself is build a wall. That was important. But, of course, in the wall, you needed gates. The gates, of course, let you in and out. But at night, they had the gatekeeper that would come to the gate and shut the gates, and that would keep all enemies and intruders and criminals from coming in. Well, look at verse 25. Chapter 21, verse 25. Its gates shall not be shut at all by day. There shall be no more night. So we have these gates, but their only purpose is to let people get in. They're not to try to keep people out, because it says later on in verse 27 that nothing, no one that defiles will get in. Only those whose names are written in the book of life. Only those who have committed their lives to Christ. It is the most secure place in the world, ever, in all of existence. We have no need to worry ever for all of eternity about someone getting in that should not be there. They all will be punished in hell, and we will have full access to heaven. Chapter 22, verse 1, we read about a river that flows from God's throne. Just imagine how beautiful and refreshing this river would be as it flows from the throne of God. Now, a couple promises that I see. Of course, there's a million that are fulfilled, but a couple that stand out to me. Think back to chapter 2, verse 7, a promise that God made to the churches. He said, "To him who overcomes, I will give to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God." The tree of life. That was one of the trees that was in the Garden of Eden that Adam and Eve couldn't touch. And now we read in chapter 22, verse 2, there is the tree of life. It says it bears new fruits. It has 12 different types of fruits to choose from. How cool is that? It says that the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Not that you need healing in heaven, but it's almost like a heavenly vitamin, you know? That's what it appears to be. It's for the healing of the nations, it says. Here's another promise. In chapter 3, verse 21, he said to the churches, "To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne." In other words, rule and reign. Chapter 22, verse 5, "They shall reign forever and ever." God's promises are being fulfilled. Now, my wife's out of town right now, and I'm agreeing with God more than ever that it's not good for man to be alone, you know? I enjoy when she's around. I enjoy her companionship, of course. That's the first thing. But one thing I'd have to say I really miss is also her cooking, okay? Because let's just be honest, I'm a really bad cook. And not only am I really bad at it, I'm really lazy when it comes to cooking, you know? I'm just like, me need food, you know? And I just want to like open up the fridge and eat immediately whatever's in it. Without even having time to shut the fridge, I want to be eating, you know? And I don't know if any of you guys are like that, but I just hate the prep time of cooking, you know? I'm like, well, Jen's not around. I guess I'll have like some toast and some water or something. I'm like helpless. And I started to think, I wonder what the fridge would look like if I were in charge. It probably wouldn't be pretty, you know? Like, after a while, after she'd been gone for a while, I wouldn't be drinking the milk anymore. I'd be eating it, you know? All the apples would turn to applesauce. I'd just be, like, spooning it out of the fridge, you know? All the grapes would just, I wouldn't have grapes anymore. I'd have raisins, you know? They're just sitting in there and turn to raisins. And it just wouldn't be good, right? Food expires. They have expiration dates. I remember going grocery shopping with my mom when I was young, and she always trained me, look for the milk with the latest expiration date. Because eventually it goes bad. You know one thing I love about heaven? There's no expiration dates. There's no need to worry about if it's ever going to end. Once you are in heaven, you are there for all of eternity. It never, ever ends. But let me tell you one thing that is expiring very quickly. I wonder if there are some of you in this room this morning who you've never made a commitment to follow Jesus. And you're waiting for whatever it is. I don't know what that thing is that you're waiting for. But you've been procrastinating. And you said, you know, maybe I'll get serious about that once I've had my fun and once I'm a little bit older. You're putting it off. Let me just tell you, your chance of making it to heaven is quickly expiring. The Bible makes it very clear that we're not guaranteed to be around another day. Who are we to think that once we're older, we'll get right with God? How do you know you're going to get much older? That's reality. I don't just say that to scare you. That's just what the Bible tells us. Our life comes and goes very quickly, and we have no idea how many days we'll be here. Because of that, it's very important that we give our lives to the Lord, that we commit our lives to Jesus. Jesus said it this way, John 5:24. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes in him who sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into judgment, but has passed from death into life. One day you will breathe your last breath, and suddenly whatever you had on the earth will matter no longer. The one thing that will matter is if you had a relationship with Jesus Christ. And if you didn't, it's all over. When you breathe your last breath, that is it. You have made your eternal decision. That's it. The great news is that Jesus Christ has paved the way so that we can skip Revelation 6 through 20. We don't have to be there for the judgment. We don't have to have God's wrath poured out on us. We don't have to stand before the judgment seat of God. Jesus said, if you believe in me and him who sent me, you have passed from death into life. You will no longer be judged. Jesus has taken that judgment for you. So all of us have an infinity star resort waiting for us. The question is, have you committed your life to Jesus? And if not, will you ever see this reward that's waiting? Let's pray. God, thank you that you have spared no cost in saving us. God, you sent Jesus, your only son, to die the death that we deserved. And then not only did you do that, because that would have certainly been more than enough, but then you prepared this place for us that we can't even get into our minds. We think of mansions that Jesus talks about in John 14, and we get this little picture of a house. God, nothing. We can't even get it in our minds how amazing heaven's going to be. But despite the rubies and the sapphires and the gold streets and the river flowing from your throne and the diamond walls and the pearl gates, all of that's amazing. But God, the thing that we look forward to the most is having our fellowship restored with you. Perfect communion with God himself. God, we thank you for that. We look forward to that. And God, I pray for anyone in this room who has not committed their lives to you. They feel pretty comfortable where they're at. God, I pray that you'd make them uncomfortable in their sin. That they would understand how much they desperately need you. And they would fall in love with you, God. Grab our hearts, burden us for those who don't know you, and help us to share your gospel with them. In your name we pray. Amen. You guys have a great day. And read ahead Revelation 22 next weekend.